Okay, it's true that I noted that it is it's going to be the 79th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, but that was just a separate tie-in to really what I want to talk about. That was just shtick. Really, there is a fascinating tshuva that I want to go through, and we're going to break it down. I know it's not our style. Usually we like to cover a breadth and a lot of topics and a lot of information at once, and this is certainly, I would say, it's Rabbi Frand-esque. Right, Frand often spends a whole shiur on one tshuva to bring out all the points. And I think this tshuva is worth it. And it connects to the parsha, as we'll see in a few minutes as well. And it's a really interesting tshuva. And this is from Rabbi Yeshua Baumel. Rabbi Yeshua Baumel is Rabbi Lam's grandfather. He is the author of the Emek Halacha. He was a rav in Europe, and he came to America in the 1920s. And the tshuvas of the Emek Halacha are fascinating. He has a lot of very interesting tshuvas on topics that people don't really write about, interesting questions. There's some Yerav Shalos and tshuvas Svarim that are the same gamut of the same types of questions that everybody gets and whatever was going on at that time. But the tshuvas in the Emek Halacha are very unique. Now this tshuva, I did not come across myself, but this is actually mentioned on one of Rabbi Isaac Bernstein's Parsha tapes. He mentions it in this week's Parsha, and he kind of gives the vort that's connected to the Parsha, but the tshuva itself, I think, deserves more time and more effort. So we're going to learn through the tshuva and see a fascinating question that gives a bit of historical discussion as well. This is Neima Kalacha Chelak Alf and Simon Membez. Rabbi Baumel was asked the following question by a Mr. Bezalel Brandeis about someone who made a pledge to the local Talmud Torah in Brooklyn. It's around, this is somewhere after World War II, as we'll see in a moment. The Talmud Torah is probably the Talmud Torah of Crown Heights. The Talmud Torah of Crown Heights was where Mr. Brandeis was the Menahel, and the Talmud Torah of Crown Heights was established in 1928, so this is, he's been on the job for probably 20 years already, and he received the following question. Somebody made a pledge to the Talmud Torah of Crown Heights for $100 if his son returned from war, from World War II, b'shalom. If he returned b'shalom in peace from war, then I'll give $100 to the Talmud Torah in Crown Heights. The son returned in good health and was unscathed from the events of war, but unfortunately he came back with a non-Jewish wife that he married in France and a child with this woman. So the father claimed, when he was approached to pay up the money, the father claimed that he shouldn't pay anything because the condition was to return b'shalom, in peace. And he says, this is not b'shalom, that my son came back with a non-Jewish wife and a child, is not the b'shalom that I had necessarily in mind. And the question that Rabbi Baumel wants to discuss is, does he have to pay? When he said b'shalom, what does b'shalom mean? That I'll return b'shalom, what does that mean? And what's the understanding at the end of the day? So quick background. When one separates truma from a cistern of wine, you have a big pit of wine, and you want to separate truma from that cistern so you can partake of the rest of the wine and give the truma to the kohen. So you do it in the following manner. The first thing you do is you draw the wine from the cistern in a kli. You lower a bucket into this big vat of wine. And while the kli is suspended in midair above the wine inside the cistern, you designate the wine as truma. That's the process to separate wine from a big vat. And then you pick up the kli with the wine in it and you lower it onto the wine press, and now truma has been separated, and the wine is good for you to partake in. Says the Mishnah in Tful Yom, this is in the end of Perek Dal in Mishnah Zayin, Hatorim es habor, one who is in the middle of taking truma on a pit of wine, v'amar, harezo suruma almanash shita'ala shalom, that this is truma if it comes up b'shalom. Our same expression, if the wine comes up b'shalom, so I have in mind that this wine should be truma. So the Tanna Kamma says, Shalom min hashever min hashvicha. Shalom can apply that it shouldn't break and it shouldn't pour. The truma wine in the kli may fall back in to the chulin wine in the cistern on the bottom. And what's going to happen then, it's going to ruin it. Because now the truma is going to mix with the chulin. It's going to be meduma. It's going to be mixed up. And a mixture of truma and chulin. Now chulin can be eaten by everyone and meduma can only be eaten by kohanim. And if that's the case, I lost out on a huge amount of money because the value of the wine is now much less for me because I only have a small market and the Kohanim are going to be able to get it for, I'm not going to be able to sell the rest of the wine to anybody else in order to make money. So the Tana is saying you can make a save in this case. You can save yourself by making a condition, by saying a t'nai, that if the truma wine in the kli falls back into the chul in the cistern, then the truma is batel, it's uprooted, it doesn't exist, limafreya. And the truma that I had suspended above the cistern, immediately the truma is removed, it's no longer truma, and whatever falls back in is chulin, and I'm saved, and I don't lose out on the wine. The truma wine and the chulin will go back to being tevel, untied, and it'll be perfectly fine. That's shalom, if something physically goes wrong. Avalo min hatuma, says the Mishnah. However, if somehow in the process the truma wine becomes tmeya, since truma tahora, truma that's pure, can be eaten by kohanim, and truma tmeya has to be destroyed, that obviously also takes away from the value of the wine in the bottom of the cistern, and now would cause a damage to the owner and the kohen as well. And therefore, in such a case, maybe you'll say, if something happens while the wine suspends in the middle of the air, if it becomes tamei, somehow becomes impure, so the Tanna Kamma says, no. You can't make a condition and say, when he says b'shalom, I had in mind that it shouldn't become tamei. When I say b'shalom, I'm only thinking about the physical well-being of the truma that I'm picking up, not the spiritual well-being of the truma. Rabbi Shimon Omer, af min atzmeya. No, Rabbi Shimon says, no. If I say b'shalom, I want the truma to come up in peace, I also mean the spiritual well-being, not the physical, but also the spiritual well-being, that it should not become spiritually not good to take anymore, including the physical issues. So, that's what the Mishnah says. It seems that the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon are arguing about the word shalom. What does the word shalom mean? According to the Tanna Kamma, the word shalom is coming to include things that affect the guf, the physical aspect of the truma. But if something happens to the quality of the truma, it's considered still be b'shalom. It's perfectly fine. It's not the way I wanted it, but it's still b'shalom. Therefore, according to our case, says Rabbi Bamel, the son comes home in physical condition, according to Tanna Kamma, it's b'shalom. Because the Mishnah says that if you're physically fine, you're b'shalom, regardless of spiritual issues.
Why is it shalom or shalom?
Shalom.
It's shalom. There's no vav.
Where?
It should be right shalom.
Shalom. The Mishnah says shalom. Shitalo shalom. There must be a typo in the way it transferred. In the first Mishnah.
Why would you assume that a person, when he uses the words, he's using the same context as the Mishnah?
It's just we're coming to understand what the way people...
I'm not saying it's not the same result now. But yeah. Why in 1945 does a person use... The Hebrew's not sort of the same Hebrew. I'm not saying it doesn't mean that. Why go to the Mishnah? It's the question really is, what did the person intend by his words?
Well, he didn't. The issue is the father never intended this to happen at all. So we're going to figure out what would that mean in language.
What the language is. I'm just saying, why go back 2000? I mean, maybe the same answer. Why go back 800 years? It should be what the language is in 1945.
Well, where is he going to look to? Where is he going to look there? They're trying to figure out what the word means.
I look in 1945.
What? Where's he going to look? Is
the Hebrew
It's not going to be sufficient. You can't look in such a place to make such a decision. So he says, according to Rabbi Shimon,
maybe you're just saying just as a practical matter. It's not about
what does the word shalom mean in Judaism? So Rabbi Shimon is going to say the word shalom excludes becoming tmeya. Even though there's nothing lacking physically, there's something lacking in quality, and therefore the son intermarrying is certainly a lack of shalom. That's certainly not a good thing for the quality and the spiritual well-being. How does the Rambam pass? The Rambam writes in Chos Truma in Perek Dalet. Hatorim bor shel yayin v'amar harezet truma almanah shetala shalem tzorech shetala shalem min hashever min hashvicha aval lo min hatuma. So the Rambam paskins like the Tanna Kamma, not like Rabbi Shimon, that even if it becomes tmeya, we don't assume that is something that we care about, and therefore the halacha is that only physical damage is considered a lack of shalom. However, the Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat and Reish Chaf Hei cites a tshuva of the Rush. In Klal Kuf Beis, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Hamocher lechaveru martev shal yayin." If I'm selling you a wine cellar, v'hitznu b'nehem, and we make a condition, shelo yeh achrayus al hamocher, rak im tishaber chavis o tishbach bilvad. So we make a condition. I'm selling you the rights to the cellar, but my wine is going to be there. If something physically happens to the barrels of wine, so that is on the owner of the cellar, who's giving me the land that he didn't, giving me the space that he didn't protect the wine properly. V'lo yeh achrayus al lokeach, and it's not the responsibility of me, the person who's renting that location to keep my wine there. Elul inyan hatam bilvad. Things that affect the quality of the taste. Im achar kach lo ira kiim ones nisuch hu al hamocher. However, if it is an issue of nisuch, that there's nisuch hayayin, and the guy comes and makes the wine not good to use, so that's on his responsibility. It seems that nisuch being ruined in ruchnius and spirituality is under the category of tisha ber tishpach, which is a physical damage. It seems to put it in the camp of the mocher, the one who's responsible for the wine cellar, that he is responsible for the physical well-being, and physical well-being also means that it shouldn't become spiritually contaminated. However, and that would seem to indicate what? That maybe, how do we paskin in this reference regarding spiritual damage? However, it's clear from the Ber HaGola, the commentary in the Shulchan Aruch, that there are two reasons why Nisuch is responsibility of the Mocher, having nothing to do with quality. And he goes on to explain here in the Ber HaGola, he says that there's certain conditions that's being made. He says, De'ones Nisuchu Dumya De'ones Shficha V'Shvira. He says Nisuch is really... Nisuch Hayayin with a guy, it's really more comparable to a physical damage. Elishakisfu ones shvicha v'shir d'shriach aval ones nisuch. It's a question of what's more common, and this was more common at that time, and therefore the Ber HaGola says we can't make any decisions here about is nisuch considered something that is more spiritual or physical. So he then quotes Rabbi Yisrael Al-Ghazi. Rabbi Yisrael Al-Ghazi writes in the Kehilas Yaakov, in his Lashon B'nei Adam Oshin, and he questions the rush based on our mission in Tful Yom. Listen to what he writes. He says, V'tzarech yim, lama lo hevi ha-rush raya ledino mehach masnisin. Why doesn't the rush, in the discussion about the ownership and who's responsible for renting the wine cellar, why doesn't he quote our mission in Tful Yom? Shuhutzrech latam shalokeach hu muchzak. Why does the rush come on to say, well, you know, the owner is holds on to the money and hamotzi mechaver of haraya, and he shouldn't be held responsible if there's issues of nisach hayayin? Va'od delechora nira de psak Rabbi Shimon to amar shalom af min hatuma. He seems to say that shalom, spiritual lack of shalom, is the responsibility of the person who's responsible for the physical well-being as well. Why should the owner of the cellar be responsible for the spiritual issues of the wine? And therefore, he says, it seems that the rush is following Rabbi Shimon, who's comparing spiritual damage to physical damage, it's equally responsible. So how come the rush is following Rabbi Shimon? Don't we follow the Tanakhama versus Rabbi Shimon? So Rabbi Bamel invokes a comment of the Yerushalmi and Trumas. The Yerushalmi and Trumas in Perek Beis cites our mission in Tevul Yom, and then says that Rabbi Shimon doesn't refer to all types of Tumah. No. You have to know what he's talking about. Not every single person who type of Tumah that comes in and makes that suspended wine Tumah is something that Rabbi Shimon would say that you had in mind to preclude that it should not ruin the rest of the wine. Amar Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina, betumas tfula yom himas nisa. Amar Rabbi Ilah, shekein tfula yom mitsuyin ben hagisos. He explains that if a person has gone to the mikvah, but the sun is not yet set, he's still tameh, right? And he can be metameh something that's truma. This is what we call a tful yom. You went to the mikvah, but the sun didn't set. You can be metame truma. Other foods you cannot, but if you touch truma, you're going to make it tame. Rabbi Shimon holds that the designated wine is safe only from the tuma of a tful yom. When you made the condition, and if the wine that I'm raising up becomes tame retroactively, it shouldn't be a problem. That was only if it's tame by one specific tuma, and that is the tuma of a tful yom. But it was contaminated by a different type of tumah, someone who is a balkeri, or a zav, or a mitzora, something else like that. And they came in contact with it. Even Rabbi Shimon would say, you ruin the wine. Why, what's it about a tful yom that's different than anybody else? Because
Rabbi Shimon says you ruin the wine anyway.
Rabbi Shimon says that retroactively, yeah. Retroactively you can undo the you can say it's not truma. You can say it's not truma. Rabbi Shimon will say that retroactive nullification, say it's not truma, is only if a tful yom touches it. Why tful yom? Because tfule yom hang out in wine presses. That's why. Because tfule yom know that their tum is not so bad. And nobody freaks out when a tefillah yom walks into the wine press. Because if they touch most things, it's not going to be a problem. They're not so biohazardous that it ruins everything they touch. So if a tefillah yom, if a mitzora or a zav walks by your wine press, no. I can't come in here. We don't want you here. But if a tefillah yom comes by, not so bad. Because what damage is it going to do at the end of the day? Most of the stuff is chulin anyway. What's the big deal? So Rabbi Shimon says, when a tevul yom comes by, and since he's common, and he's found in my wine presses, in my wine cisterns, therefore I have in mind that one interesting guy who's a tevul yom, who comes by here and gets around the situation, checks things out and touches stuff, I have in mind that his type of tumah may ruin what's going on. But would Rabbi Shimon ever think a mitzora or a zav or a balkari would walk in to the wine press and start touching? No, it would never occur to me. So if any other tumah walks in and ruins it, Rabbi Shimon would never have such a concept in mind. Rabbi Eli explains that there's a particular concern about contact with the tefillah yom because they're found there, and therefore we assume, according to Rabbi Shimon, that the individual making the tanai intended to protect the designated wine from the tumah only of a tefillah yom. He only had it in mind, and he didn't intend to protect the wine from other types of tumah, because they're not commonly found there. He never would have occurred to him that such a tumah would walk in to his wine press, and therefore he never had it in mind. Therefore, he says Rabbi Bamel, it seems that the Rush and the Mishnah in Tefillah Yom are in line. They're both saying the same thing. Because in both instances, an uncommon occurrence is never intended from the original stipulation. I never would have intended that my wine should have nisach hayayin and a guy should come and pour it. Why would that happen? And I never intended that a different type of tumah should come in and ruin it. In the case of the Mishnah, this means other types of tumah. In the case of the Rush, this means nisach. And therefore it would seem that Rabbi Shimon should also agree that the mocher would not be responsible. Anything you're expecting to happen, you have in mind to be responsible for. And anything you don't expect to happen, you don't have in mind to be responsible for. And therefore, he says that's why the Kilos Yaakov is not a problem. So even the Rush and the Mishnah Tefillah Yom are in line together. We're only left with is having Paskin in the Mishnah Tefillah Yom, Tana Kama or Rabbi Shimon. Let's turn now to this week's Parsha. What does that have to do with this week's Parsha? No, Bal Korech. So Yaakov says, the pasuk says, Yaakov says, "V'shavti b'shalom al beis aviv aya Hashem li lelokim," and it should be that Hashem will protect me. I'll turn home to my father's house b'shalom, and Hashem will be with me. How does Rashi say and interpret that he'll return home b'shalom? Does it mean he'll be physically well when he returns back? No. Rashi says, "Shalem min hachet," he will be complete from sin. Shelo el amed midarchei Lavan. I will not become spiritually contaminated from the house of Lavan. So says Rabbi Bamel, Mikan from Rashi we see that shalom means spiritual well-being. It seems to be very clear that with being without sin is the same as being b'shalom. And that's what the offering he wants to say, that maybe this is a proof to say the father shouldn't have to pay. So Rabbi Bamel says, no, it's not a proof. There's no proof from here, because Rashi qualifies his statement that Yaakov needed to be saved min hachet because he's going to the house of Lavan. Because I'm going to Lavan, I need special protection b'shalom. But if I wasn't going to the house of Lavan, I would never think that I would need special protection in sin. Only because I'm walking into the lion's den of sin do I need to have special b'shalom. But stam b'shalom, if I use shalom in a regular term, would not necessarily imply that. Why? Because Lavan is a Rasha, and it's Shriach. It's common, says Rabbi Bam. It would be, you would expect that any Tom, Dick, and Harry who walks in the house of Lavan is going to come out scathed. That's what you'd expect. So therefore, I need special permission, I need special usage of Shalom to protect me from sin. Therefore, it's like a Tevul Yom. Because a Tevul Yom who's commonly found in the wine press is assumed that there's going to be a possibility that something's going to go wrong. When I'm walking into a situation and I assume there's going to be a problem, that's what I have in mind when I make my conditions. And therefore, Rashi interprets B'shalom to mean free from sin. But it would seem that when sin is not common, when you don't assume something is going to go wrong, then you wouldn't interpret Shalom to be referring to free from sin. When this guy sent his son overseas to war, Did he have a havamina that his son is going to intermarry? No, it never occurred to him. That's not the shalom that he had in mind.
I mean, going back to the past couple of years, people in the military
certainly the Montagu voting military certainly have a high percentage of.
It's certainly not the norm. Well, I mean, it's certainly not the.
What are people afraid of going to the Russian army because they lose their Yiddishkeit? The believing Yiddishkeit is in the military. Is
but we're America. Talking about the American army.
American army that I work for.
That's what I'm saying. You're talking about the American. The assumption is when a person goes, we don't assume the person's going to intermarry. That wasn't what his assumption when he sent his son off to war in 1940. So the above discussion is according to Rabbi Shimon. However, according to Tanakama, even the tumah of a tful yom, which is often found in a wine press, tful yom hangs out there, would still make the wine tmeah, right? The Tanakama, that whole discussion, the last 15 minutes, was according to Rabbi Shimon. But according to Tanakama, I don't care what it is. Tumah, ruchdias, is never something that you can be mevatel that you didn't have in mind. The Bracious Rabbah says, v'shabti b'shalom comes to exclude shvichas damim. So that's not like Rashi. The Matnas Kahuna on the Bracious Rabbah explains that shalom always means the opposite of war. Kola Torah kula, shalom means not war. That's how he explains it. Nevertheless, the Emek Halacha explains, and this is also noted by the Maharal. He doesn't quote the Maharal, but the Maharal says the same thing, that in the case Rashi was compelled to say shalom, means not sinning, because earlier in the Pasuk it says, V'yishmerani b'derech hazeh, which clearly means physical well-being. Meaning the reason Rashi has to come and say shalom means ruchnias is because Yaakov already made a statement about his physical well-being. And therefore, why would he say shalom again? If you told me you were going to be vishmarani, that you were going to protect me, then what do we need shalom for? So shalom must mean something above and beyond physical well-being. Therefore, Rashi was forced to interpret shalom in the referring to sin. And this would mean that there's no proof from Rashi that returning b'shalom includes ruchnias. However, the Emek Halacha quotes the Bracious Rabbi here. The Bracious Rabbi says, "Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Shalem begufo lefisha kasuv v'utzolei al yerecho." Rav Yochan Amar Shalem b'Talmudo. So we see there's a machlokus in the Medrash there. Does Shalem mean physically well that he was healed, or does Shalem mean that it was in learning, that his learning was intact? So again, perhaps we could say machlokus Hanakam Rabbi Shimon in the Bracious Rabbi here as well. That is point number 2. So we discuss Tful Yom. We discussed the Rashi. The last discussion is the sugya of Hezek She'eino Nikar. We know that there's damages in Halacha, but there's a type of damage that you can't physically see. The Emek Halacha suggests that the Machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and the Tanakama is based on whether Hezek She'eino Nikar, damage that is only beneath the surface, but not on the physical area, is called Hezek. If you say Hezek She'eino Nikar is considered damage, that damage that I can't see is considered damage, then Tuma is Hezek She'enu Nikar, and it should be damage. And that means the tznai, the condition, that the truma should not be truma anymore, if it becomes tameh, should exist, because that's a damage. Oh, I can't see it, but that's still a damage. However, it's not considered hezek she'enu nikar, that it wouldn't be a chisaron in the guf hadavar. This explains why the Rambam says the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara in Erevin says, it's a teiku, we don't have an answer, if there's a machlokes, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir. If we assume the Tanakama of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, like Rabbi Meir is almost always the Tanakama of the Mishnah, then how should we paskin machlokas Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Meir, regarding whether a condition to be mevatel the truma that becomes tamei should exist? If we say the machlokas is surrounding Hezek Shein Nikar, how do we paskin Hezek Shein Nikar lav shmei Hezek? Damage that you cannot see is not considered damage, and therefore the reason why therefore, if something is ruined in quality, the tumah or intermarrying, in our case, it should be chisaron in shalom. It's not considered a chisaron in shalom, the Tanakama, not like Rabbi Shimon. And that's how the Rambam would paskin. That's where Rabbi Bama wants to suggest the reason we follow the Tanakama here is because Hezek, she'enu nikar, is lav shmei Hezek, is not considered real damage. Let's turn now to the end of the tshuva and see how Rabbi Bama writes to this father, or writes to the Menahel, who has to talk to his father about paying up the money that he promised. So he says in the last piece, he says, V'nachzor l'nidon didan. He's, let's come back now to our discussion. Based on what we said, Mavur Dehaish Hanal, this man, Mechuyev Lishalim Hamea Dolar Latamatar, he must pay the money that he promised to the yeshiva. Mishum Dehalacha Katanakama, because the halacha follows the Tanakama, Deshalom Einem Mamait Rak Shvicha Vashir Avalotoma. Shalom means physical well being, not spiritual well being. Vahacha Dami Lenitmas Kanal, and this is the case of becoming Toma, of becoming Tame, the same as before. And this is certainly more severe than truma. In such a case, over there, you can't be fixed. And therefore, it's not shalom. Even though he sinned by marrying a non-Jewish woman, it's possible that the son may do tshuva, and he may turn his life around, and she may also convert l'shem shemayim. V'alkein shapir mikri b'shalom, and therefore we can still say the son is b'shalom in such a case. He wants to be down the kaf sechus to say that the son is still technically b'shalom, even in ruchnius. V'af shikvar hulod banim imena, but they do have children. U'b'shas chagiga karile ma'avos lo yuchal lizgon, and the Gemara Chagiga calls this a tangled knot that can no longer be fixed if you have children. Mikal makom zedavkash b'holid mamzer. That's if you have a mamzer, but you can't undo the mamzerus. If the children would also convert, they would also be kasher, and that would also be considered still b'shalom. Especially when it comes to laws of neder, we establish, we follow the language of how people speak, as it says in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Zayin, "V'zevadai debaloshim bnei adam tevas b'shalom hamachoven hu habrios." And if you ask most people, they understand shalom to mean the health and well-being. V'alkein pashru bar demechuyv l'kayim nidro asher neder la'tamator. And therefore, the father must pay the $100 that he promised the tamator. So, just to bring it together, a very interesting way of an interesting shaila that nobody seemed to have had before in such a case, coming from unique perspectives, a mission in Tful Yom. Who would ever thought to connect A and B, a Rashi in this week's Parsha? Very creative way to bring it together.
The yeshiva, but the fact is that more people would have been familiar with Rashi. I remember my grandmother always going to Rashi with the three ways, Shalom. So I would have thought that the person is much more likely, not the true one, to know the Rashi there and think it's, you know, the three way Shalom. You know, not the slumdus to make the yeshiva get paid the money, but the way that people...
I don't think it was slumdus to get the yeshiva paid the money.
That's what it was.
No,
that's... What was the connection to the yeshiva? He knew the yeshiva person, so we have to...
Yes, that doesn't mean... What?
What does Shalom mean?
It probably means in Ruchnias.
So, that's what people are going to think about.
Arbal Nechesh Leparagus, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what was the outcome?